Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not.
In this video, we'll explore some of the top Catholic Bible translations and compare a few verses. In the description below, there are links to some of the Bibles compared here that I personally recommend. When comparing translation philosophies, there are generally two sides of the spectrum, formal and functional. Formal equivalent translations attempt to reproduce the word and structure of sentences from the original languages. Functional equivalent translations attempt to reproduce the original thought. Both translation philosophies must make interpretive decisions, since English words and grammar are markedly different than the original Greek, Aramaic, and Hebrew. Even the most formal translations will need to dip into the functional. Here are the 10 translations we will be looking at. Starting with the more formal side, we have the English Standard Version Catholic Edition, the Douay Rheims Bible, the Revised Standard Version First and Second Catholic Editions, and the New Revised Standard Version Catholic Edition. In the middle, we have what some would call optimal equivalent translations, with a moderate use of both formal and functional. We have the New American Bible Revised Edition, the New Catholic Bible by Catholic Book Publishing, and the Revised New Jerusalem Bible. And finally, at the more functional end of the spectrum, we have the New Jerusalem Bible, the Jerusalem Bible as published by Catholic Truth Society with the Grail Psalter, and the New Living Translation Catholic Edition. Just for a little context, here are how some of these are used throughout the world. The RSV Catholic Edition is used in official English language church documents, like the scripture quotations in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. An earlier adapted version of the New American Bible is the basis of the lectionary in the United States and in the Philippines, that is, the readings that are heard at Mass. The Canadian lectionary uses the NRSV as its base. The United Kingdom, Ireland, Australia, and New Zealand use the Jerusalem Bible. The Southern African Catholic Bishops Conference and the English-speaking Caribbean use the RSV Second Catholic Edition. And just recently, India has moved to use the ESV in its lectionary. So if you're looking for a scholarly Bible, you will want something in the standard version line of Bibles, that is the ESV, RSV, and NRSV. The RSV Catholic Edition has been out for decades, and plenty of Catholic scholars and apologists like it, particularly its more recent Second Catholic Edition. As such, there are many study Bibles in this version, like the Great Avenger Catholic Bible, the Ignatius Catholic Study Bible, and the Didache Bible. The Catholic edition of the ESV is more recent. After the Catholic bishops in India approved it in 2018, the Augustine Institute in the US got permission to publish it in 2019, marketing it as the Augustine Bible. As for the NRSV Catholic edition, HarperCollins has recently started publishing under the Catholic Bible Press name these nice leather Bibles and a couple of journaling Bibles. I would be remiss not to include Catholic Commission translations in this section as well, namely The Neighbor and the Douay Rheims. The Neighbor shows how verses can be translated outside of the standard version line of Bibles, and recent and ongoing revisions have made it more formal. After its 2011 revision of the Old Testament, the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops announced a revision of the New Testament, which is set to be completed by 2025. The Neighbor is licensed to many publishers. As for the Douay Rheims, it is an historic translation that many English-speaking Catholics treasured well into the 20th century. What it lacks in recent scholarship and manuscripts, I think it makes up for in its rich history, and at the very least serves as a comparison Bible. Today, Baronius Press and St. Benedict Press publish it, which brings us to the Bibles for devotional reading. Of course, the previously mentioned Bibles can also be used for devotional reading, but Bibles in this particular section tend to be easier to read and more natural or casual in its rendering, especially of some of the more difficult passages, bringing a certain breath of fresh air to the sometimes stilted language of the more formal translations. The New Catholic Bible by Catholic Book Publishing is a recent translation. Fully published in 2019, this Bible is easy to read and its notes are especially helpful catechetical tools for learning or teaching the faith. I think the notes in this Bible are what many people expect of the notes in other Bibles, because these are more concerned with expounding on the faith than providing scholarly textual criticism. Next, we have the Jerusalem Bible line of translations. The original Jerusalem Bible was famously the translation Mother Angelica used for teaching. Published in 1966, it became the first widely accepted Catholic English translation since the Douay Rheims. In 1985, the New Jerusalem Bible came out, which was slightly more formal but retained the style of the original. And recently in 2019, the Revised New Jerusalem Bible came out, which marked another shift toward the formal, while retaining the style. And lastly, we have the New Living Translation Catholic Edition, the most natural and casual of the translations, often adding clarifying phrases and rendering old terms into modern English. After years of review by the Catholic bishops in India, they suggested a handful of changes to the base translation, which the publishers accepted, and we are told will be included in all subsequent editions of the New Living Translation, Protestant and Catholic alike. Now, before we compare some verses, here are the reading levels of each version. Something to consider if you want an easier read or looking to buy for a younger audience, or even just someone new to the faith. Now let's compare some verses. We'll be going through a few of these, so feel free to pause the video to read through them. The RSV First and Second Catholic editions are on the same line, because often they are exactly the same. Whenever they differ, I've bolded it, and put the second edition in parentheses. I'll be making a few comments here and there about things that stand out to me, but again, feel free to pause the video to read through these verses, because I won't be commenting on every single verse. Let's start with 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 1. We see how the different translations deal with gendered words, like brothers and fathers. Some use the neutral term ancestors for fathers, and others go further by adding sisters after brothers, as context dictates. In 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 28, we kind of see the issue again, as the translations deal with the Greek word anthropos, which does mean man, but often in general about the human person. This is where we get the English word anthropology, the scientific study of humans. I think the ESV does the best here. It's interesting to note how the NRSV, RNJB, and the NLT avoid the issue altogether by switching to the second person and speaking to the audience with the phrase, examine yourself. 2 Corinthians chapter 2 verse 10 is a point of contention for some people who prefer the traditional rendering of the Douay Rheims at the end of the verse as person of Christ instead of presence of Christ, as most other translations. I think either translation works here if you have an understanding of what is being conveyed, and this is a perfect example of how more functional translations can help you understand something, like the New Living Translation at the bottom, which does a perfect job here. And when I forgive whatever needs to be forgiven, I do so with Christ's authority. In Deuteronomy, we see the Shema Israel, Hear O Israel, with ever so slight variations. I think my favorite is the ESV, because it sounds better with that parallel wording of the Lord our God, the Lord is one. I don't know, I think it sounds better. In Genesis chapter 1 verse 2, we see how the different translations deal with the Hebrew word Ruach, which means spirit, breath, or wind. So we see them use spirit of God, or wind from God, or mighty or divine wind. In Genesis chapter 3 verse 15, we see the Douay Rheims is different than the others, when it says, She shall crush the serpent's head, because it was translated from the Latin Vulgate, which says that. And so we have a lot of Marian art which shows her crushing a serpent's head. However, the original Hebrew does say he, as in the offspring, which I think still fits perfectly with Mary crushing the serpent's head, because we've always understood Mary in relation to Christ. She is the mother of God. Through her offspring, Jesus Christ, the serpent, is crushed. In Isaiah 7:14, we see an example of how the RSV First and Second Catholic editions differ, with the second version using virgin instead of young woman. In John 18:6, I love how the neighbor says, I am, in all caps. It calls to mind the Hebrew name of God revealed to Moses, and I think better illustrates why they would fall to the ground. Luke chapter 1 verse 28 is another point of contention for some people, because we're so used to the wording of the Hail Mary that when we're confronted with a different version, it seems off-putting. I also prefer the traditional rendering of Hail, full of grace, but the other renderings are likewise faithful to the original Greek. The beginning is supposed to be a joyous greeting. The next part is supposed to be something like, one who is favored with grace, or grace favored one. So altogether, it could sound something like, joyous greetings to you, grace favored one. And so that's what the translations are grappling with. In Psalm 22:16, we have an issue with the Hebrew being ambiguous. The grammar makes it seem like something is missing. It says, "like a lion, my hands and my feet." The Septuagint, which is a Greek translation of the Old Testament that was completed between the 3rd and 1st centuries before Christ, says, "they dug my hands and my feet," which has been taken generally to mean pierced, a prefigurement of Christ. In Psalm 82 verse 1, most translations rightly speak of the divine council and God being in the midst of the gods. The Hebrew word Elohim being translated here can refer to the one Lord Elohim or the other spiritual beings. So here it says Elohim takes his place in the divine council in the midst of the Elohim. This is another example of how the New Living Translation does a good job at explaining what it means. I don't particularly like how the second edition of the RSV changes it to angels, because while angels may be spiritual beings, they are a smaller classification within the bigger class of Elohim. In 1 Samuel chapter 13 verse 1, we see the ESV and Douay Rheims use a traditional rendering, but the number is lacking in Hebrew, and so many translations use ellipses to show missing information. The Septuagint, the Greek Old Testament, is missing the verse altogether. As such, the Jerusalem Bible also lacks this verse. And in some Greek manuscripts, it says Saul was 30 years old when he became king. This is what the New Catholic Bible and the New Living Translations use. Additionally, they include 40 at the end for 42 years of his reign, to correspond with Acts 13:21, which says Saul ruled 40 years.
Apostolicam Ecclesiam.